Good evening. We are going to go ahead and begin this board meeting of the Upper San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District. It is September 24th, 4:30 p.m. If you please all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Next, we have the roll call of the Board of Directors. Vanessa.
Director Trevino. Director Chavez.
Present.
Director Trevino.
Present.
Vice President Fellow.
Present.
President Santana.
Present, and we do have a quorum with four members present. Our next item is the adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? That passes on a 4-0. Our next item is public comment.
Good afternoon, Madam President. We have not received any written public comments prior to this meeting. However, if anyone wishes to speak now, they may do so at the podium.
Okay, thank you. Seeing none, we will move on to committee reports. We have no committee reports in our packet. Next, we have consent calendar.
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes on a 4-0. Our next item, we have a guest here, Mr. Randall Newdeck, and we will have a presentation on the Delta Conveyance Emergency Preparedness.
And I'll do a brief introduction of Randall. Randall is the manager of Bay Delta Programs for Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. Randall has been working at MET since the beginning of time. How long have you been at MET?
Over 30.
I know it was as long as I've been involved at MET.
He started with me.
Yeah.
Wow.
But so Randall made a similar presentation a few months ago. I can't remember which director saw it and said, "Tom, that really should be of interest to our board," which I agree with. Yeah, it took us a while to get it on the calendar, but Randall's here today to give us some update on some of the issues and solutions we have for the Delta and situations that may arise in the Delta that could affect our water supply.
Thank
Randall.
Thank you, Tom, President Santana, and members of the board. You know, a lot of times we come here and we talk about the Delta Conveyance Project, but we also want to talk about the existing freshwater pathway, what improvements we're doing, and some of the near-term stuff that we're doing as well in the Delta. There is a summary of the presentation in front of you and slides as well. So today I just wanted to go over kind of the evolution of what we call this freshwater pathway from an emergency pathway to a more significant now. Some of the strategies for securing Metropolitan's assets, not only our water supply, securing that water supply through the Delta, but also the islands we own in the Delta as well, and the roadmap for improving our partnerships up there and asset management. Many of you know the Delta. It encompasses two major water systems, the Sacramento and San Joaquin. There's 10 major rivers that flow into it and that flow out to the San Francisco Bay. There's really no dam. We just push enough fresh water into it so that at the bottom of the Delta, the southern point, we can pull water down to the Central Valley, to the Southern California, and to the San Francisco area as well. It's really interesting, though, if you look at an annual runoff comparison of some of those basins compared to the Colorado River. The Sacramento watershed, which is where we get most of our supplies, is 18 million acre feet annual water a year. Remember, Metropolitan gets about 1 million acre feet right now on average from that watershed. The San Joaquin watershed is about 3 million acre feet a year. And then the North Coast watershed, which is off limits due to the Federal and State Wild and Scenic Rivers Act, is about 25 million acre foot, and that flows down and out to the ocean on that. But then you compare it to the much, much larger Colorado, and you can see 13 million acre feet. It's just amazing how much water actually precipitates in California, I should say. you look at the Delta. Delta starts really up at Orville Reservoir at the top of the screen. It goes down the Feather River and then in the Sacramento River, and then this is the existing pathway through the middle of the Delta, and then we have the state and federal pumping plants at the bottom, which pump the water down again to the Central Valley of Southern California and the San Francisco area. Metropolitan has four islands in the Delta. See if it comes up there. Those four islands you can see are right along that pathway. And over the last couple of years since we've gone in, we've actually improved 15 miles of those levees to secure, additional secure that reliability of the Delta. Unlike most major systems, this is about a 30-mile system, and there's no real owners of it. So it's a hodgepodge of, right now, maintenance on those levee systems. And one of the good things is owning those islands surrounding those, we can assist in improving some of that. In addition, the proposed Delta Tunnel around the east side would bring water from upwards of up in the lower part of the Sacramento around the Delta through a tunnel, a single tunnel to the bottom. One of the questions we asked our board a couple months ago was if 80% or more of the core state water project and Central Valley Project deliveries flow through this so-called freshwater pathway, even with the proposed Delta Conveyance Project, is protecting that pathway important? And what we heard from our board is that, yes, it is important to secure that. So what is the evolution? Why is this that important now? And quite frankly, in the past, it wasn't as important. Back in 2006, Lester Snow, who was the director of the Department of Water Resources, Katrina had just happened. And he said, your levees are not even as good as New Orleans at that point. Following that, the board, Metropolitan Board, said to the staff, hey, you need to do something. We brought in Dennis Majors, who had just gotten off building Diamond Valley Reservoir, and he made the statement that the Delta is the single greatest risk to interrupting our supplies. So at that time, we said, what can we do real quickly to secure some of that? And so we really focused on one of these elements, just flood and seismic risk, to try to secure that. From that, we looked, this is just an example of some of the faults in the area and what they can do. This was done by the U.S. Geological Survey showing that we could get upwards of a 6.7 earthquake in the Delta off that Midland Fault. That could cause multiple levee breaches and multiple levee failures. So we showed this to our board a number of years ago, and again, they said, okay, we need to do something about this, at least from an emergency standpoint. So again, a 6.7 earthquake would cause upwards of 3-year outage. That was a statement by the director of the Department of Water Resources at that time. Remember the statewide? Yes.
I'm sorry, I have a quick question.
Sure.
If you don't mind. On the 6.7 earthquake.
Yeah.
So anything above, is a 6.7 and above would be disruptive, and anything 6.6 and below, is that what the estimate was, or how was that?
It was anything around that 6.7 to 6.4 would be disruptive in the Delta.
Okay.
And so they did a full, you'll see here, we had a set of experts, not only locally but internationally, do a number of seismic studies on this effort. But what this was a statement by DWR that it could cause up to a 3-year outage, and I think that's what our board said. Wait a minute, that's a problem, since state water project is at least 30%, actually more at that time, of our supply. So, President Santana, to answer your question here, here's some of the studies we did over that time. The initial study in 2008, done by the Department of Water Resources, and we followed that up with UCLA, basically universities in Northern California, Southern California, and experts throughout the nation. Some of these are premier seismic consultants, do analysis of dams, you know, throughout the world. We also, you can use, for those of you who want to know their names, that's a list of some of the names there of some of the people we worked with. You can see there, many of them in Northern California as well. One of the things we looked at in addition is what is the risk of not just a seismic, but overtopping our flood-related risk. Some of these risks we have in dry years. In fact, in a year or so ago, Victoria Island there on the bottom picture, you can see them putting rock on it. That had a big slip in the levee system. We're still analyzing that. That was on a dry, it was on a low water period. There was no flooding, and the levee slipped. Luckily, it did not inundate the island, and DWR and the local reclamation district got out and secured it. But that was directly on our pathway to bring water to the state and federal pumps. So again, this emergency pathway, really it was only one pathway through the Delta. It was we were really focusing on from an emergency standpoint because we assumed we would get the Delta Conveyance Project. And so that would really be our savior there. So we didn't want to put a lot of money into this, just enough to secure it until the Delta Conveyance Project came online. The way it would work, if we did have a big event, we'd put a diversion structure on the Sacramento River, that dark blue. We'd move it through the light blue center of the Delta. We also had another barrier out near the west there, that yellow ocean salt barrier. And then we could bring water down to one of those levee systems. So about 30% of of the total supply going to those two pumps we could bring down. Again, this is a quick fix. It was an after event. It was a low-cost way of doing it. Not a very elegant way, and it didn't look, you know, it was almost let the emergency happen and then try to fix it afterward. We worked with the Department of Water Resources and the Corps of Engineers putting rock stockpiles in some emergency material warehouses out there. Since that time, some of these warehouses are out on Metropolitan's islands as well. I had a question too, how would it affect local cities around the Delta? Sacramento is really outside of the Delta. They would get their water upstream. East Bay Municipal Utility District, which is the East Bay of San Francisco, actually gets its water above the Delta and then brings it in a pipeline. Stockton gets their water from groundwater and from the San Joaquin River. Really, the only agency that would be affected would be the state and federal projects and the Contra Costa Water District if you had a major event like this in the Delta. So again, let me just, this emergency pathway, I'm going to switch to why we've really taken the word emergency off, was only dealing with the seismic. And it was a low-cost approach, no major levee design improvements, just get rock and material stockpiles out there and implement the Twin Tunnel Conveyance Project. Let me pass these right here. So what has changed? Over the last, 5-6 years, when the governor came in, he switched the tunnel. He said, let's not do a twin tunnel Delta Conveyance Project. Let's move it down to one tunnel. And what it did at that time is, with a twin tunnel approach, we could take most of our supplies. When I say we, the state and federal projects, could take most of that supply through that twin tunnel if the Delta was out. With a single tunnel, you can't. About 80% of the water will go through the Delta. And if the Delta is out, you can't get the full state and federal projects basically through that single tunnel. Just physically, you can't do it. So what we looked at is saying that in addition to the proposed tunnel project, which is the kind of a longer term thing that we're looking at, what can we do in the near term? And so we're looking at both pathways now. How can we secure both pathways? Both not in the from an interim standpoint, but also from a long-term standpoint as well, since, again, most of the water will continue to go through the Delta. in the last couple of weeks, we went through a trailer bill process. Many of you were involved in that. Our general manager, Devin Upadhyay, has asked us to continue to look at near-term actions that we can do in the Delta over the next 2 or 3 years to try to secure additional supplies in the Delta, not only from a regulatory standpoint, what can we do to try to get more water out of the pumps. And there's some other projects we're looking at right now. They're not identified on this slide, but there's some other projects we'll be presenting to our board in the next 2 or 3 months to try to show that there are some smaller projects we can do. It doesn't make up the same amount of water as the Delta Conveyance Project, but it does provide some small actions as well. In addition, the Camp for Water process, we'll be looking at various portfolios of action. Your general manager was there at a meeting this last week, asking the Met staff to start putting together some portfolios, and I think we're going to put that together so that the board and the member agency managers can start looking at and, as Mr. Love said, start criticizing him and critiquing him, which is, I think, is the right way to look at him, because there's multiple ways you can do these and getting input as well. So again, those are some of the things we're doing. We're also looking at some additional things we can do with the Delta Islands. Remember, the Delta Islands are right along that pathway. We're working with the Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Water Resources, and the Bureau of Reclamation. We're bringing smelt onto our island. We've done research on that in this fall and winter time. We're going to bring more and more smelt. On these islands, they're pretty big parcels of land. We have four of them, four islands, about 5,000 acres each. And we have lakes on the island, and we can grow Delta smelt. And that's what the fishery agencies would like to start doing. We're actually going to bring on a couple thousand Delta smelt in the fall here. And if the science is right and it works out, I told our staff I want to grow 1 million Delta smelt on the island.
Yeah, but we have a problem. You know, we have almost half of the directors don't want all of these islands. You know, we have four. Some of them want to sell off. They think it's a waste of Met money. Jeff Keitlinger keeps telling me, he said we should keep them. They weren't that expensive. And another thing, you're talking about the one tunnel. The two tunnel one, I've talked to agriculture up there. They really want two tunnels. And I even talked to Carla Nemeth. We were at the BizFed a year ago, and she sat next to me. And I said, Carla, the farmers want one tunnel, or want two tunnels. And she said, it's going to be two tunnels. I don't know how she knows that, but she said, when this is done, it's going to be two tunnels. But I think we should keep the islands because we're doing some experimentation there. We've done stuff with cattle. We're doing new things there. But, you know, we have a contingent of Los Angeles and San Diego that do not want these. They want them sold.
Yeah.
So I hope you can fight against that.
Well, you know, when we initially bought the islands, they were really just for the Delta Conveyance Project. And, you know, with the change from a tool to, you know, to a smaller tunnel, we've really looked at the islands again and seen the importance of them. One other thing, too, is this kind of happenstance is, we had hired a couple of years ago in Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and they said, you have a gold mine, not literally gold, but you have a gold mine underneath these islands. You have three formations where you could store billions of tons of CO2 gas, and the state and feds will pay you a ton of money to store it underneath there. So we're looking at that, trying to analyze that, and we want to get that back to the board because we don't want to sell the islands and say, God, we just gave away a gold mine. And some of the analysis we've done, or that not we, but Lawrence Livermore has done, said we could make hundreds of millions of dollars a year. I mean, it was almost too good to be true. And I mean, if you could make a tenth of that, it would be it'd pay a lot more than the cost of the...
Aren't we making money? We're now doing rice growing on a lot of them, so...
Yeah, we're
shipping it to Japan now.
Yeah, we're starting to move. One of the reasons why we're doing rice is because the Delta is subsiding at a rate, and we have to, we're trying to show not only how we can grow rice to make more money, but how we can stop the subsidence. So if we can show that and then make that that model and show the other owners of the Delta how to do that, then we can start securing the Delta.
You know, we're trying to educate directors more. We're trying to educate more of the legislature. We found out, and Devin said this plainly to the board of directors, that the legislature doesn't know anything about water. You know, that's the one big problem in California. And I give Don Ortega, our chair, credit, because now he wants us to look to Feather River, not just, you know, we're doing all these Delta trips right in the middle of the Delta, but he says that it's the Feather River that really is our artery. And I think it's pretty smart to that we're being educated in that. So just keep supporting the islands. I would appreciate it.
I had a question. Can you tell me more about this rice and subsidence? I'm fascinated.
Yeah, I mean, the Delta is 10 to 20 feet below sea level, so they're not really islands, they're bowls. And if they break, salt water will come in and pretty much ruin the water supply through there. So what we're trying to do is slow that subsidence down. And right now, everyone in the Delta is growing corn, and that's what subsides the island the most. If you've ever been up there, it's almost like it's reeds laid over, but when it grinds up, it's almost like talcum powder. And actually, the ground burns. If you have a fire up there, it's very, very hard. You have to flood the land or it just continues to burn. So that rice is the ability to, we can actually use, you know, rice and clay soils use actually more water than we will use in the Delta, because we can bring up the groundwater from because remember, these islands are below sea level. We can bring it up and really wet the roots of that and stop subsidence in the Delta. We're also, in addition to that, we're doing some habitat restoration with tules. And you would say, well, isn't that just kind of ruining that land? How are you going to make money off that? Right now, we are looking at getting carbon credits off that land, both state and federal credits, that will provide us a benefit there, and doing mitigation banks. So we think a combination, we have like four or five different layers of revenue we think we can get from these that we've been analyzing with others, and we think that will provide a model to help. It'll help in two ways. One is, if the board wants to sell the islands, it will provide a robust piece of land to sell, and if they decide to keep it, it'll provide a more robust piece of land to keep. So either way,
you should come on my trip in January. And we're going to go through all that. Well, you know, another thing too is Don believes that maybe we should be fixing the levees. How do you, and since this, he's about giving up. We worked so hard, you know, that all the directors were in Sacramento for weeks, and the governor finally left it to Met and us to do his bidding. But do you think if we just fix the levees, that would help?
One of the things that years ago when we had, I showed you Katrina happened, actually Dennis Majors and I did an analysis of trying to fix the levees. And at that time, we didn't have a lot of information. And we said it's going to cost tens of billions of dollars to do it. Over that, since then and now, we've done all these studies, and actually we've come up with a new levee prism design. And just along those two pathways to the pumps, we've analyzed it. We have new data. We have actual data of levee improvements in our area. And it's not $10 billion. It's $400 to $700 million for those two pathways along. That's not the whole Delta. But for our security, for our water supply security, that's all we need to do it. If you want to do the whole Delta, it would be $3 to $5 billion. But again, from a state and federal water project standpoint, it's a lot less cost than what I knew, than what we initially did 15, 20 years ago.
So. Do sites need this Delta path, or they operate without it?
One of the things on sites is so it can use both the tunnel or the Delta path. And remember, sites is much smaller. Sites is, an annual water supply, or say a max water supply of like 150,000 acre feet a year, with an annual of, you know, 30 to 50,000 acre feet a year. Where when you're looking at the tunnel, that's much, much larger. That's going to provide, you know, 200,000 to a million acre feet with an average of about 400. I know I gave you a bunch of numbers, but it's about 10 times larger. So yes, we can easily use the Delta with sites. We do not need a Delta conveyance project. There's plenty of available capacity during the time we want to take that water at the state pumps. And it's because sites is, you know, like I said, it's not that massive of size that you would see out of a Delta conveyance project.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Is there more for the?
That's pretty much it. There was a couple other slides, but I think you've seen most of them. Again, I think the biggest thing is that we're going to continue working to try to provide some near term actions here, so that we don't just sit and wait until the next governor comes and, you know, 2 years down the line where we decide what to do on Delta conveyance. From a timeline standpoint, the Delta Conveyance Project is looking at a state board permit sometime December 2026 or sometime around then. The Sites Reservoir Project, we're looking at going to the board sometime this coming next summer, so the summer of 2026 to actually make decision whether they want to go forward with that project or not. So there's some of these timelines, or at least on the Sites Reservoir one, is kind of, will come up pretty quickly.
Sites is pretty well, the Congress has basically assured Sites, and it's going to be, we need federal funds for that. That doesn't have any money right now with all these projects, but it's all good, you know, if we can get it going. So much on our plate right now.
For your emergency preparedness, so should those levees, should the Delta fail and we don't have the Delta conveyance built, so you're looking at 6 months without that water, is that right?
Sure.
I think, well, we're fortunate in this area because we have our basin,
mm-hmm.
but there are areas in Southern California that will be high and dry, so to speak, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be a significant impact.
And I think that's a good reference to the Diamond Valley Lake project. So one of the reasons that project was built was for emergency storage within the region on our side of the San Andreas Fault. Or if there's a failure in the Delta, you've got 800,000 acre feet, a 6 months roughly supply sitting there in the region. Now they can't move that water to every part of their service area, such as us, yet. But there's projects underway that'll make that happen. And then the other thing to think about, with or without Delta conveyance, even if Delta conveyance gets permitted and starts moving forward, it is a 20-year project. So these seismic events can easily happen within that time frame, which with or without Delta conveyance, the freshwater pathway and the stockpiling of materials to, you know, hold back salinity is going to be really important. Even if a Delta conveyance starts going forward, it's a 20-year project to construct.
And we think we can take that 6 month down to zero with this new levee design.
Oh, wow.
I said was about $400 to $700 million. So if we do that, we're pretty secure in the Delta.
We have a lot of directors now who are looking at Pure Water and they're looking at the Delta. Because I don't know if we're going to be able to do both. And some of them think, Tom, how do you feel about this, that there, it's cheaper to fix the Delta, but we're not assured of anything, even when we fix it.
So, you know, and I was going to talk about the Camphor Water process in my presentation, and we got some really, Randall referred to the meeting we had Monday, and I think we got a really, really good update on the Integrated Resource Plan findings. They've updated that to 2025 data. And the situation has not gotten better in 5 years. The projections of shortage within the metropolitan system are you know, just as much as they were in the 2020 update. really important number that was presented Monday was how much new core supply does Metropolitan need? They look at, okay, if we get this much, we need this much more core supply, but if we can have this much storage, then we need a little less core supply. So the core supply Metropolitan needs is 300,000 acre feet. Under scenario C, that's the more optimistic scenario. 300,000 acre feet, Pure Water is only half of that. And they don't have projects identified for the other 150,000 acre feet. Now, Delta Conveyance will help with that, but it will not solve the entire problem. The other thing about our imported water supply is that the wastewater that goes down to the sanitation district facility, and they use to recycle, about 30% of that flow is imported water. If we cut off our imported water supply, the available recycled water from the wastewater plants is also going down, and there might not be enough flow to even do the Pure Water project. So it's not one or the other. Randall mentioned the portfolios. The portfolios, you know, Pure Water along with resource programs or Delta Conveyance along with storage projects. So there's not a single silver bullet to solve our future water supply challenges.
Do any other? Yes,
so excellent presentation. Those slides, the visual slides, were really good, and I thought if we don't do them at the Colorado River tours, the aqueduct tours, those would be good to show that audience. So we started with two tunnels, and I thought that was a great answer. We switched to one. If we switch back all the permitting, CEQAs, and everything, how much more of a delay and expense would that be?
We'd have to redo the whole thing. So it would be another 6 to 8 years. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, you can't use the stuff that you previously did. They'd make us redo the whole thing.
Yeah, because just about 2 weeks ago, I was with one of the candidates for governor were talking about that, he was talking about, you know, two tunnels, but that's a problem. You know, you have a new governor, it takes them a couple of years to get into it, then they kind of take a stand on the issue, and then they're on their last term and it's kind of they're ready for president or something else, and so these projects kind of go by the wayside almost. It's not like it's there for the long haul. So although we stay in the business in the water and we need water for the rest of our lives, not just for a 4-year term or eight years total. So no, I was just thinking about his comments and what we're looking at.
The public has absolutely no idea the millions of dollars that have been wasted. And you have to give Governor Newsom some credit. He's brought it along further than anybody, but he just had a legislature that wouldn't go along with him. You know, it's a horrible thing. But Governor Brown was on the right track, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a mess.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your presentation. Do we have any more questions or comments? No. Really appreciate you coming by. Thank you so much. Okay. We're going to go ahead and move on to item 8B, nomination of two Upper Water representatives to the Mount St. Gabriel Basin Water Master for calendar 2026. Do we have any nominations?
Kelly, are you happy with us? Don't nominate Santana and Fellow.
So, is that the nominations?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to ask if everybody is comfortable with that. I'll be happy to support that. So the nominations will be
Okay. Great. All right, let's take a vote.
Yeah, we should put that in the form of a motion.
Okay, we'll have a motion. Director Fellow, do you want
to
make
a motion to continue with Jennifer Santana and Anthony Fellow.
Second. Fantastic. There's a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? All right, well, thank you very much. That passes on a 4-0. Much appreciated. We'll go ahead and move on to item 9A. We have press releases and news articles in the packet. There's a really interesting one about PFAS
and an attempt to ban the cookware. Our next item, item 10, is attorney's report.
Yeah, just a few items. Madam Chair, I wanted to address a new Senate bill that came out that's going to be effective on January 1st. You may recall, it's 2012 or 2014, there was Assembly Bill 1234, and that was a bill that required agencies that pay compensation to their board members. It put in the ethics training requirement every 2 years, and also the reporting requirements. I think we have even have it on our agenda as AB 1234 reporting requirements. And this bill is essentially an expansion of that, in that it maintains, of course, those ethical training requirements, but expands the persons who have to go through the training. Right now, it's electeds, but it's now going to be expanded to include department heads and administrative offices. And so I think for our purposes, it's probably going to be expanded to Tom, to Evelyn, and Patty. I think that would probably be the officers of the agency would be subject to that. But not only does it expand the ethics training, but it has a whole new element to it where it requires fiscal and financial training for those employees and officials who are involved in the business of the district that involve financing, bonding, auditing, and all the kind of ethical stewardship issues that come up. So I think, again, in that regard, that's going to involve Tom and Evelyn and perhaps Director Garcia as the treasurer. And so what it does, it's kind of like what AB 1234 did. Remember, it had every 2 years you have to do 2 years of training. This is the similar thing. It requires that people who are involved, or officials and admin people who are involved in the financial mechanisms of the district, will have to do this training every 2 years, and it's a two-hour training period. So I expect we can see CSDA and AQUA beginning to offer this training. It's also, the legislation allows for private training to happen as well. As you know, in the past, we've done some of the ethical training. I wouldn't trust myself to do the financial and fiscal training, but I'm sure there'll be options available to the district to do that. So it's new legislation. It was signed, I think, in September, but it's not effective till January 2026.
Okay.
And just a heads up on the next meeting, there's some other new legislation that involves some changes to the Brown Act, and we'll give you an oral report on that as well. And on both these pieces of legislation, my office will be sending out kind of a notice or a summary of the legislation, that, so you can have it in your inboxes. So that concludes my report.
Thank you. So our treasurer might have some additional training starting in 2026, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Exciting.
Assuming she stole the treasurer.
Right, yeah. Right. Maybe I'll pawn that off on Chavez. All right. Great. Thank you. Do we have any questions for Steve? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to engineer's report. And we have Stan with us today. Hi, Stan.
Good afternoon, President and members of the board. I'll be updating the board on five items. The first item is exploring options for San Gabriel County Water District and Sunny Slope Water Company water supply interconnection. There are no updates for that. Second item is the emergency response plan update. Upper Water has, Stetson Engineers has been preparing the emergency response plan update. Upper Water has provided Stetson with some updates to the remaining sections of the emergency response plan, and Stetson Engineers is currently compiling the complete ERP report.
And we plan to bring that to the committee in November, the committee and the board, as a receive and file option.
The third item is reactivation of Metropolitan Water District interconnection USG 7 to the city of Monrovia. There are no updates for that. Fourth item is integrated resources plan update. Again, Stetson is working with Upper Water to complete that IRP. Stetson is incorporating comments, and and updating several projections within the report.
And on the IRP, the information I mentioned that came out of the Camp for Water workshop on Monday about Met's reliability, Met's future reliability, is real crucial to incorporate that into our IRP. If we're looking for our local reliability, it is fully dependent on what is the future reliability of Metropolitan Water District. And in the case of what's been presented, it is Met's reliability without Delta Conveyance, without Pure Water. And so that's what's that. Those projects have not been approved, so we're using that to project what can we do locally, working with our partners, Water Master, and the producers, utilizing the storage in the groundwater basin, so we can survive periods of time where Met may not be reliable, and it's a real crucial element of that. The other thing on the IRP, we're in the wrap-up phases, but something a higher priority has kicked up that is utilizing Stetson staff, which I'm sure Stan's going to talk about next. It's something about a mollusk or a mussel, you know.
Actually, that's not on my.
Yeah, so we have Stetson and virtually we're taking up a lot of their time working with us on the golden mussel control plan.
Okay. We'll include that in the next report. Fifth and final item is the upper water boundary update. Three Valleys Municipal Water District is planning on submitting a LAFCO application for the boundary updates at the end of this year. They just recently provided a draft legal boundary description of their boundary updates. So that's the current status of the projects.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you, Stan. And we'll get a golden mussel update, I'm sure, from Tom.
Yeah.
Upcoming. Do you have any questions for Stan regarding the items he discussed? Seeing none, thank you so much. We will go ahead and move on to General Manager's Report.
Yeah, and since we kind of started with a golden mussel, I'll give you an update. We have we haven't called it a task force. It's a team of Upper Water, Water Master, Three Valleys Municipal Water District, the San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District, and Stetson is providing the technical support to draft control plans for discussion and consideration with LA County Public Works. Our focus right now is Public Works because they're the ones that said turn off your deliveries because the golden is getting close. And so we also have looked at the connections and which connections is really most important to keep on or turn back on sooner than later. And the first one is the delivery to the canyon spreading grounds, because that canyon groundwater basin, if it doesn't get water continuously, the groundwater levels drop fairly quickly, and it could impact their groundwater production. That's primarily Azusa and also the surface diversion companies like Covina Valley Water Company and the city of Glendora. So we have the San Gabriel District has continued deliveries to those surface water facilities that are not under the jurisdiction of Los Angeles County Public Works. They have no jurisdiction. They're still delivering the water to those facilities. So we're focused on those control plans, and I'll just tell you the elements of the control plan is we're looking at pretreatment. What can we do before the water gets to the facility to reduce or impair the population of the mussels? Being able to contain that water so it doesn't go downstream and contaminate or infest other parts of the river system. Post-delivery treatment or drying out to eradicate any mussels that might remain or have been delivered upstream of the containment. And lastly is testing and monitoring to make sure that we've been successful. So that's the plan for all the connections except for USG3. USG3, it goes directly into the natural riverbed, much harder. We can contain it at the Santa Fe spreading grounds, but we probably can't prevent the mussel from establishing colonies in that river system. And if there's a flood event, we can't contain because the county will have to release water for flood control. It could move the water. So we've shifted the focus on USG3 to looking at, okay, how do we manage and mitigate the golden mussels if and when they get into the flood control system? And so we've started the work on that. Water Master Kelly has had discussions with the county. Water Master has an existing spreading agreement with the county. It's been there for a long, long time that lays out provisions and responsibilities related to the county spreading water on behalf of Water Master and the producers. And Kelly has begun a conversation with the county. How can we amend that agreement to address what we need to do if and when the mussels actually get into the flood control system? So that's good progress. We had a really good meeting with a representative of Fish and Wildlife. We also will get Fish and Wildlife to review and approve these control plans. And it was a very positive meeting with had with Fish and Wildlife. This is brand new for them. Yes, they've dealt with quagga mussels, but the legislation that was approved has thrown another mussel, and they don't even have regulations written for this time. And it's going to take them some time to get there. But I think our progress is positive. At the end of the day, we may not have every staff member from the county convinced that this will go forward, but I think the right ones will get there with it, the right decision makers at the county. So that's the golden mussel update. I did mention the Camp for Water process. We are, I won't say we ever disengaged, but we were doing some other things for a while, and we are ready. Metropolitan, the member agencies are ready to identify projects and portfolios for evaluation through the Climate Adaptation Master Plan evaluation process. The updates from the Water Resource Group on the supply, the future reliability of Metropolitan was very helpful. It's not necessarily good news, but it helps hone in what do we need to work on, what does Met need to work on to secure water reliability for the future. So I'm looking forward to working through that process. When there's substantive information to share with the board, I'll probably do that with the Water Resources Committee and maybe the full board, depending on the information we have available. And I expect that process, well, the evaluation process might be ongoing, but the first round of evaluations, their goal is to have that done this year, before the end of this fiscal year, because there's going to be some important decisions regarding some of those projects the Metropolitan Board will need to consider early in the year, specifically Pure Water, and as Randall mentioned, later in that year, Sites Reservoir. So, from a water supply standpoint, from a water year, which we typically look at it from October 1st through September 30th. Locally, we are at about 500% of average with that one storm, 2.5 inches in one day that we got. But it's very early in the season, as we know, and we'll see what comes forward. On the state water project supplies, things are looking great. There's a lot of water left in San Luis. Storage is in good shape for this time of year. So if they have an average year next year, I think we'll be fine. Even if they have a below average year, we'll be okay for the next year. For us, the question, will there be sufficient water in Metropolitan system where they will continue cyclic water deliveries, assuming we get the golden mussel issue resolved. But even if Metropolitan is using water from storage, we can still buy water. We just can't deliver it to cyclic storage. We can still deliver it to the basin. We just have to pay for it when it's delivered. On water supply, so we're approaching the year end. This is when Water Master buys their RDA water, is at the end of the year. And we sell that out of the MWD cyclic storage account. Kelly and her group are working on the final numbers. And for Upper District, and I mentioned this to the Water Resource Committee meeting we had earlier this month, is we are considering for us, it's a large year-end purchase of water. So we have our own cyclic storage account, which we use when in the middle of the year a producer goes to Water Master, I want to buy replacement water, or I want to buy my own cyclic water. And so in the middle of the year, we take that up our cyclic account is like a revolving account. We fill it up, we sell water out of it, and then eventually we need to replenish that. So we are down to about 3,000 acre feet in that account. It's been as high as a few years ago, 8,000 acre feet. The other consideration is that the MWD rate for untreated water goes up 8% January 1st. So it makes a lot of sense to make that purchase now. So we're going to use, we're going to propose, and I'll bring this to the board for approval. It's a lot of money. is using about $10 million out of our reserves to purchase water. There is an order from the city of Arcadia. Depending on if that order comes through upper cyclic account or Water Master takes that through the MWD cyclic account, if it comes through upper water, that will give us more money to buy more water year end. If it doesn't, then we'll buy less. And so Evelyn and I have done the analysis, so we're comfortable. We are preserving enough reserves, cash river, liquid reserves, you know, so that next year we're not, it won't cause a problem. But it is a good financial decision. It's a good water resource management decision. Lastly, not so good news. I've received two letters of retirement from our employees. 20% of our workforce is retired. And I was telling Director Santana, well, since I've been general manager, over 50% of our workforce is either resigned or retired. So obviously I'm not doing some things right. But joking aside, so Evelyn Rodriguez, Ruben Gallegos have both given us their notice of retirement, which is, you know, I just told Evelyn at a meeting this afternoon, I'm losing sleep. Because there's a lot of stuff to transition. We'll get through it, it's also an opportunity with an agency our size, 10 employees. It's an opportunity to look at duties, responsibilities, and how can we structure the organization to make ourselves more efficient and improve. So so both these positions provide that opportunity. Specifically with the CFO position, I'm not going to advertise and fill that position right away because I want to look at how do we want to make changes to that. And Evelyn's given us till the end of the year. She'll actually be on the payroll until end of January, but she'll be in the office until the end of the year. And so we got a lot of work to do. I've made the decision that I want to bring in an interim accounting director or whatever title we give them to work side by side with Evelyn to get us through the transition and then to help us figure out, okay, how do we want to restructure the organization for that position? So Evelyn gave me a list the other day on legal size paper, 3 pages long, of weekly, daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, annual accounting functions that we need to make sure we're transitioning over. But I'm confident we'll get there, and I can't tell you I am disappointed to lose two long-term very dedicated employees, but congratulate them as well on something I hope to do one day in the not too distant future. That concludes my general manager report.
One year, not too distant future.
10 years is not too distant, Tony.
Okay. Thank you. And I want to thank Randall Newdeck for being here today for Met. You do a great job at Met in your monthly reports and One Water. And as all of you know, Savaji Demest, correct?
Desmet.
Okay, was selected unanimously as the MWD's new general manager.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't say this, but are you surprised his last name is unpronounceable? Like the previous two Met general managers?
Keitlinger, I knew. Yeah. But he's been general manager at the MWD's member agency, the Inland Empire Utilities Agency, and he will join the board as general manager designate starting November 1st, and he'll shadow the current GM until the first of the year when he will take the reins. He worked at the Orange County Water District, where he oversaw the development of the groundwater replenishment system, and then he became assistant general manager to West Basin, and then became general manager of the Inland Empire, and he's been a professional engineer for 25 years. You know him, huh?
I know Shivaji well, very well, at least 15 years. I've known Shivaji. He's a great colleague. You know, he just contributes to our discussions amongst the member agency managers. I even gave him advice when he was at West Basin when they hired a new general manager how to deal with that situation. But no, Shivaji is a very good colleague. Know him really well. Very good choice by the Met Board.
He's a very serious man. He's a no-nonsense guy.
As I described,
he's
more direct than Devin.
Yes.
Devin's, you know, he can be diplomatic when he needs to be. Shivaji is more direct, and there's nothing wrong with being direct.
No, I think the unions might be a little shocked by him, but all for the good. No, he's a really great guy. I know him, and happy for him. He gave the best public presentation. The second thing is Met MWD had a wonderful tribute October 9th, naming Diamond Valley Lakes Inland Outlet Tower after former General Counsel Gregory Taylor, and he served with him at Met. And as chair of the naming committee, the chair asked me if I would be the MC for that program, and I did like it, Greg Taylor was a great friend at Met. It included addresses by three general managers, Devin, Jeff Keitlinger, and Ron Gastelum, and current counsel, Marcia Scully, and Taylor's son, who happens to be part of the Pechanga Indian tribe, gave a great talk about Diamond Valley and how the Indians' contributions up there. Diamond Valley, as you know, has become the cornerstone of water reliability that MWD provides for Southern California. The 270-foot tower inland outlet is a remarkable feat of engineering and which makes Diamond Valley function. And it is Diamond Valley which doubled the region's surface water storage capacity with the ability to store more than 800,000 acre-feet of water. And it was a tough job getting Diamond Valley. It was a horrendous job. It gave you nightmares after a while. It was just a daily grind. Because of some of the residents, the Domenigonis did not want that, and it was just a great deal of work. And the man who did this and got it through was Greg Taylor and Mr. Wiley. And those two made this project happen, and that's why we're naming that tower after him. This morning I did give a talk about the Delta Conveyance to the Economic Partnership, had a meeting of their legislative committee, and I'm trying to get that committee to help us to put the Delta at the fore of when they do their legislative meetings in Sacramento, because we have to continue with that. Another thing, Steve, maybe you know more about this than I do. There's been a new law in the state of California that directors who have trips to the Colorado River and Delta can bring their spouses, their girlfriends, their boyfriends, but they must pay now. Do you know anything about that?
No, I haven't looked at that.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting. So lots of things to do. Met will be in session next Tuesday for executive committee and for some special water committee reports. Thank you.
Great. We're going to move on now to Water Quality Authority report. Director Chavez.
So the report is there in your packet. I think it's item number 14. The board took actions on some of the elections that we have for AQUA, for president and vice president, and then we also had a Region 8 elections that we voted as well.
And who did you vote for?
Well, Dr. Fellow was up for
chairman
of the committee. It was a contentious vote. It was a 6-1 vote. But the board wanted a unanimous vote, so I switched my vote. And so, congratulations, there, Dr. Fellows. You have our support.
I do now, in Ventura and LA counties, all the water boards I represent.
That's good. Good job. And that's all I have.
All right, great. Thank you so much. Okay, our next item is Water Master Report. Kelly.
Thank you, President Santana, board members, and staff for having me here tonight. I will be very brief. The key well elevation as of October 17th, which was last Friday, was 249.7, I believe. A month before, it was 250.3, which is the first time we crossed over the upper range of our target since 2005. Storage in the canyon is about 18,150 acre-feet, which is about 22% of average, and that does not include post-storm that we had last week. There is still inflow at both the San Gabriel Canyon Reservoir as well as the Morris Reservoir, ranging between 23 and 40 CFS. And in terms of water quality, in September, we sampled 46 wells for water quality, and in August, we did 29. And there have been no notifications of any shutdowns of wells for water quality. Unless you have any questions, that's all I have.
Thank you, Kelly. Do we have any questions?
Can I just say that I want to thank Kelly and Linda. They've been coming to all the Met meetings and speaking about pure water. I think it's very important that you do that because LA just, you know, we got to get them aboard.
Yeah.
They're going to have some new members coming on. One of them left. Michael Luna has left. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, and I would encourage you all to attend the San Gabriel Valley Water Association quarterly breakfast on the 13th of November. We have confirmed Devin Upadia, as well as Robert Ferranti from the Sand District, and they're going to do a handoff discussion back and forth about the value of pure water to our
region. And I don't know if it's confirmed, you've invited Shivaji as well.
I have invited Shivaji as well.
Great.
And all of the Met Board, so we'll see how many come.
November 11th, you said?
13th.
November 13th.
Thursday morning.
Okay.
Pomona Valley Mining Company.
Okay.
Oh, it's not next Monday.
No.
That's the board meeting.
That's the regular board meeting. The annual meeting is the breakfast meeting on the 13th of November.
All right, great. Thank you, Kelly.
You're welcome.
Next on our agenda, AB 1234 compliance report is in our packet. And now we have director's comments. Director Chadwick. Director Garcia.
Yeah, I do have some comments. I just wanted to thank Director Travis for having the really difficult task this week. We sponsored jointly sponsored a golf tournament for Coquina Valley Optimist. And so essentially I've been involved in this club since it started. And so like I have a heart for service, and you know, you come back and you have a life outside of, you know, college when I was doing all the community service. And I guess there was a lot of people looking for that, like just kind of post-COVID. So we made our own club. And so the only thing we do is run this golf tournament to sponsor sports scholarships for kiddos. So like basically Covina, West Covina, Glendora, La Puente area, like kind of our shared shared area. We basically find out who needs money to play sports. And then like we basically help them find those funds. I mean, cheerleading, football, everything like that, it costs like $300. So anyway, so I'm really happy that we got to participate this year, and I just wanted to thank you for helping out. You know, the tough job having to take one for the team.
Did
and
play well?
You know, I don't know how that, I don't want to say anything about that.
I played well.
But really it goes to a good cause, and it's just nice to know that the kids can get out there and do the things that maybe they wouldn't have been able to do. So, you know, we all know that, like, being involved in our community and learning all the skills that you learn while you're part of a team is things that we do here every day. So I never talk about it, but I'm just really happy that we got to contribute because this is the fifth year, and we actually finally figured it out. And so thank you, because there's going to be a lot of kids playing sports because of that. So that's all I – oh, and also I just –
oh, yeah, what about Patty?
I was just going to say the longest drive competition winner was Miss Patty Cortez. So
brand new clubs.
It only took two shots.
Did you do the shot, though?
Yes, but she –
but it was her ball.
No, I didn't do it. We weren't on the same team.
Yeah. But that's all for me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Director Fellow.
I have nothing. Thank you.
All right. I have no comments as well.
Jennifer, could you announce?
Oh. Yes. I do have a comment, actually. I would want to give congratulations to Ms. Evelyn Rodriguez for a bittersweet congratulations for 18 years of service. Thank you so much. And Jessica Hernandez. I don't think she's here right now. For 2 years of service. So thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Yes, fantastic. Okay, next we have future agenda items. The ad hoc committee we had, is there any pending updates on that by chance?
So are you asking about the contributions to those projects?
Yeah.
So where are we? We had two meetings already.
Right. So we haven't had a GovAffairs meeting, so we will have it. It's on the agenda for November the 1st. The GovAffairs meeting in November, I think it's November 4th or 5th. And then the plan would be that based on that discussion that it would move to the board meeting for November 12th. Okay, great.
Fantastic. Okay, and do we have any closed session today?
We do not.
We have no closed session. In that case, we are adjourned. Thank you.
It's Patty's birthday, too.